So here we are again in Esther, and we have covered a lot of ground so far, and it's a very interesting book. And as I was through this series thinking about Esther, I said, you know, the next time I go to Haiti, that's the book that I want to teach from. Because it's so rich, and it's applicable even for us today. And so we've learned last week. I just want to have a quick review about what we've talked about last week before we delve into today's text. That really summarizing the book of Esther in the light of what God is doing is that God is really ridiculing the power of this world. The people who are seeking their own glory. And we saw last week that God is laughing. And the application we will use is from Psalm 2 to say that, you know, when all the powers and the kings are doing all of these things, God is like sitting in heaven and it's laughing. And that's really what happened when Haman was planning to kill Mordecai, and God is, even though God is silent, Haman is doing all of these things, and God is sitting and said, "You don't know what who you're dealing with." And but we also saw that God has acted this way throughout history, right? Since the creation, Satan has always, when Satan tried to revolt against God, God threw him down. You know, Pharaoh, same thing. God destroyed Pharaoh in Egypt because God can't stand people to seek their own glory. God is jealous. And we've read from Daniel's all these kings that God brought down because they didn't acknowledge who God was. And it's really from the same group of people that we have in Ahasuerus, from the same kingdoms. Who also rising, and the Hamans of this world also, who rose to go against God's people. So I struggle to come up with a title here, because this is really the peak or the climax of the book. But it's also, there's a lesson here that there is I think there are two climaxes for whatever reason. But come up with, God has determined the fall of the wicked. Just to pick up on the God's theme here. If the question to be answered in the story of the conflict, really, of the whole book is when Haman against Mordecai and God's people. Haman is plotting to kill the king, to kill Mordecai. We saw at one point that, okay, you know what, this will come to a point where Haman's wickedness will get to a point of, hey, so high, it's going to fall. You know, it cannot continue because God has to deal with that wickedness. And so we see on one hand as a really subtitle, Haman has fallen. But the way that this is done through the book is that Esther exposes Haman's wicked plot to kill the Jews. So let's read chapter 6, verse 12 through 14, and then we're going to read also chapter 7. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. And Haman told his wife Zerech and all his friends everything that had happened to him. Then his wise men and his wife Zerech said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him." While they were yet talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went into the feast with Queen Esther. And on the second day, as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king again said to Esther, "What is your wish, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled." Then Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish, and my people for my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent, for affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king. Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, who is he, and where is he who has dared to do this? And Esther said, a foe, an enemy, this wicked Haman. Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. And the king arose in his wrath from the wine drinking and went into the garden, the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm was determined against him by the king. And the king returned from the palace garden to the place where they were drinking wine, as Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. And the king said, will he even assault the queen in my presence, in my own house? As the word left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance of the king, said, moreover, the gallows that Haman had prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, is standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high. And the king said, hang him on that. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. And the wrath of the king abated. So what we kind of covered a little bit of that setting last week as well, that Mordecai was going joyful and glad of heart in chapter 5, verse 9. And now we saw in that new setting that he is mourning. He covered his head and he's not very happy anymore. So, and we've also talked about the fact that instead of Mordecai, well, Haman is so self-centered, he's narcissistic and self-absorbed because, you know, he's after the king honored Mordecai, and what Haman reported is that, well, look at what happened to me. It was all about him. So it's not that instead of saying the new dust, I mean, we've learned that dust was done to Mordecai, whom the king wants to honor. Haman didn't see it this way. He said, you know, this is what happened to me. So when something good happened to somebody else, Haman said, no, this is not good for me. So everything of life is really in relationship to himself. That's all he saw. But the fortunes also were changing. So what we hear here is that while they were yet talking with him, in what we read in verse 14, the eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. So the book of Esther, well, in the book, the narrator accelerates the pace of execution of events and affairs just to heighten their importance. So in Esther 2, verse 9, Haggai quickly gave Esther cosmetics, her portion of food, and 7 chosen young women from the king's palace. As if Haggai, he was saying to himself, she is the one. I will give special attention to her because Esther found favor. And Haggai said, you know what? I'm just going to give her everything that I can. I need to start serving her now. In chapter 3, verse 15, we read also that the couriers went out hurriedly to broadcast Haman's edict to kill, destroy, and annihilate all the Jews. So to Haman, the destruction of the Jews is determined. He said, I don't want to delay this anymore. I want to execute the plan. Hurry everybody out just to broadcast that we want to kill all the Jews. In chapter 6, verse 10, the king hurried Haman to honor Mordecai. He said, hurry, take the wolves and the horse, as you have said. Do so for Mordecai the Jew. So what the king is saying here is that, that's it, Haman. You really got it. What's an awesome idea you have here. Go do it now. Don't leave anything that you have mentioned. Okay? It's really important, you know, because the king was like, what should we do? Because that was never done before, right? That was never done before in the kingdom. What should we do? What will the king do to the man whom the king wants to honor? He said, do it, because it's really awesome idea. In chapter 5, verse 5, the king asked to bring Haman quickly to the first feast. So what's happening here is that the king is excited about this invitation. He's excited about pleasing Queen Esther. Hence, he offered her half of the kingdom. He said, you know, I'm glad to see you. You know what? What do you want? I'm really happy to give you whatever you want. And in chapter 8, verse 14, we read also the same thing. The couriers mounted on their swift horses, and the youths in the king's service rode out hurriedly, urged by the king's command. And the decree was issued in Susa, the citadel. I will not talk about this now because Joel will cover that text next time. So, but here in our text, the narrator is speeding. It's really like going over 70 miles an hour here. Haman hurried to his house, 6:12. While they were yet talking with him, meaning they could not even finish the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, because there is a little discussion here about what they mean by second day here. We had second day, but I found in the New Living Translation that they rendered that term second occasion. Mm-hmm. And I would kind of favor that because of, one, the pace of the story, and secondly, Esther's promised the king that she will tell him the wish and request tomorrow. So I kind of like the pace, and that, you know what, it was like the second occasion, the second feast. But it really, in reality, what matters here is that there is a quick pace, like things goes really, really fast. And we've also learned that the king's eunuch arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. You typically do not rush someone to a party. Yeah, you know, it's a dinner party. You don't rush people there. But here the narrator took Haman's breath away. That the day was supposed, that day, if we think about that same day, it's in the morning, was supposed to be a pinnacle of his career. He was supposed to be like, I'm going to hang Haman, and then, oh, this is even better for me. I might be the guy who's going to be crown, you know, I'm going to be king-like today. And he was so close to his dreams. He was so close to satisfy his greatest desire to look like a king with the king's robe on the king's horse, with the king's crown. And that was it for him. And then this is not what happened. Hey, he thought that he was going to kill Mordecai. His enemy didn't happen. Instead, he was rushed to pay homage to Mordecai loudly and in public. He was embarrassed, disappointed, and lost. And then suddenly he rushed home for comfort. In the middle of his grief, he didn't even have a time to take a breath. He was rushed to the feast, not knowing even what awaits him. I believe this fast pacing of this event means that God has determined the fate of Haman. He just want to get it done. And it will happen quickly. It's just like, okay, you know what, Haman, I'm done with you. It's going to happen quickly. We can ask the question, will the prediction of his friends and his wife come to realize? Will he surely fall before Mordecai? I mean, you can imagine the nervousness of Mordecai going to the feast. He's not as enthusiastic as the first one, right? Because here, he's not even taking a breath yet. He knows that, okay, well, wife and children, you will surely fall. And I'm invited to a feast. What's next? What will the king be asking me when we get there? But he has to put on a face, you know, because I'm invited to a feast. So I need to look like everything is normal. But he's no longer normal because he's just in a mode that, okay, now what? I'm mourning something here. So the king and Haman, they went to the feast with Queen Esther. And on the second day, they were drinking wine. And we know the story. And the queen is asking to save. The Queen Esther said, if I found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish and my people for my request. So this is the third time that the king asked Esther about her wish and her request. I mean, through the book, things are repeated, and they're repeated for a reason. And the author of Esther is really great in writing this story. This is really like full of with repetition. Sometimes it's three times, sometimes it's two. But that's the third time the king asked Esther about her wish and her request. It means really the king is serious about pleasing his queen. You see, contrary to Vashti, who did not show up when she was called, Esther showed up when she was not even called and sought to please the king. So, you know, it's really the difference here. Esther is the person that really pleased the king. The king was happy. Mm. And Esther, and you know, this is really not the Vashti that the king had before. Esther is seeking to please. Look at two feasts for me. I mean, this is really great. Esther is elevating the king, but she was doing that in a cunning way. You know, it's an approach. It's, you know, we've read when we studied earlier that the wine drinking, you know, occasion. It's really like, okay, you know, it's when the king, you give the king what he likes. See, that's the context. That's how you win the heart of the king. You like party, you like wine. I'm just gonna have a party for you. You know, I'm just gonna give you what you want. And so that's really her cunning way of doing it. She did not try to reason with the king, like to demonstrate that, okay, you know what, look, the Jewish people are good people. Look at how they contribute to the kingdom. She didn't really go there trying to really show that, because I mean, Jeremiah said, you know what, when you go to Babylon and to, you know, you're going to work hard to make the country prosper. And at the end of the book, we saw that Mordecai also is doing that. Mordecai is really good for the Jewish people, also for the kingdom. So the Jewish people were really good contributors. They were not like lazy or anything like that. But she didn't go into reasoning like this way. I mean, she could have evoked Mordecai, whom the king just honored, as an example. Or even we'll go back in history to mention Daniel, who really have served the kingdom. No, she didn't even want to face him indirectly, or she used emotions. If it pleases the king, let my life be granted to you. Be granted for my wish. Yeah, I mean, the king who would say no to something like that? You, my queen, that you pleases me, if you ask me for your life, of course I will grant you your life. But Esther repeated the phrases from Haman's edict to kill, destroy, and I needed somebody is seeking to destroy me, to kill me. These are really strong words. But these are also Haman's exact words. It's Haman's own words in the edict. He said, you know what, we want to kill, destroy, and annihilate all the Jews. So she would be okay to become a slave. That's what she said, if she had a voice. She would even bother to bring that to the king. And again, this is a very difficult text to translate here. When we said, you know, what is it again? The verse that talks about the loss to the king. So in here in ESV, they translate that, you know, it's really like going to be a loss to the king. But in the NIV or New Living Translation in ESV, they kind of translate it to say that, you know, I won't bring that to you because such distress will not justify disturbing the king's, you know, it's not big enough to bring to you, okay? That is, you know, yeah, if we were just sold slave, I would be just quiet. You know, what is it? I mean, okay, you know, it's not, your time is too important to bring things like that to you. Selling you a slave, even though it's a very difficult thing. So Esther wanted to make the point, King, you know, this is really, really bad. I'm here because the man who somebody is trying to destroy is so bad, that's why I'm here begging you for my life. Okay? And the king said, who is he? Wait, the king had, okay, somebody is doing that. Who is he? He said, because it seems that the king did have no idea of what was in the edict. but he said, who is he? And of course, Esther have revealed that was the wicked Haman. So I think there are two important things here that I want to highlight, is that Esther is unfolding Haman's plan. Like, because the plot is wicked. I mean, Haman is not simply seeking to assimilate the Jews so that they can obey the laws that he said that they would not obey. But his desire is to destroy, kill, and annihilate. So, also the plot if we take the translation from the NES, I mean ESV, it's also true that there is no benefit to the kingdom and to the king to just destroy people. That doesn't give you anything. You just have less people in your kingdom. So that is also true. So the killing of the Jews are also a loss to the kingdom, not a gain. But also, Esther is revealing her identity as a Jew. If you remember so far, the identity of Esther has always been hidden, okay? Not revealed. All the time, Mordecai said, don't tell who you are. Don't say who you are. Don't say who you are. And now, Esther said, you know what? I am a Jew. Okay? Finally, Esther is revealing the secret that was kept for so long. And I believe the combination of these two climaxes in the story is just dropped like a bomb on Haman's head. He did not know that anybody could ever put him in such a bad light. He did not know who he was going against, the very Queen Esther, who has the heart of the king. Because if Mordecai if Haman began to fall in front of Mordecai the Jew, who is like a simple official, he will surely fall in front of Queen Esther the Jew. So this is really like, you didn't know who, because God put Esther in the palace for a reason, but that was hidden. Haman would probably would not crafted that plan if he knew that Esther was a Jew. Because he said, okay, you know what, I don't want to go against the queen, but this was kept so that Haman's plan can go all the way to the end for his own fall. So Mordecai, you know, Haman prepared gallows, but even Esther is really have a feast. This is planned the way that God wanted to happen. Then we've learned.
I was just going to say, it's making me think back to Mordecai's words to Esther in the first place, way back in chapter 4, you know, where he said, do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you'll escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this.
Like those words are still resonating
right here. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's really for a time like this that Esther was brought to be queen. And it's true. That Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. And the king arose in his wrath from the wine drinking and went into the palace garden. And Haman stayed to beg for his life. Then we learn later on that they covered Haman's face. See, since Haman was promoted, the narrator painted him as having one mission, to kill the Jews. There is no mention of him doing anything positive for the king and the kingdom. He was promoted, and then he wrote an edict, sat down to drink and to eat and drink, and then he left the city of Susa in panic. So since then he sought one thing, to hang Mordecai the Jew, but he ended up paying homage to him. So he's now terrified. And he's begging Queen Esther the Jew for his life. He's asking his enemy that he was trying to kill to save him. But the pace even is faster now. It's really like faster now. I mean, it's really like in the 500. The king got up and went to the garden. Haman stayed behind to beg. The king came back from the garden. As the words left the king's mouth. Again, it's really like, the narrator just said, okay, we don't have time for this. Just covered his face. The king just said something, sentence is kind of a condemnation. Cover his face. He's dead. So they covered Haman's face. If you remember that Mordecai was the one mourning at the beginning, you know, if you remember also earlier that Mordecai covered his head, then Haman covered his head. Because he was disappointed, but now it's not just a disappointment. His face was covered because when you're condemned by the king, you don't see the king's face again. If you remember, Pharaoh telling Moses that I don't want to see your face again. Yeah. You know, it's really. That's this expression to say, you know what, if I see your face, the next time I see your face, you're dead. Okay. But when someone is condemned, they just cover their face so that they don't the king, it's kind of, it's over for you. You have no time, no occasion to get forgiveness, to receive forgiveness. So, you know, Esther begged for her life from the king, and we know that as a result, Haman is now begging Esther for his own life. The one who was bragging about his greatness is now at the footstool, or at the couch of Esther. And but the situation has really been aggravated for Haman. And now he has no power to fix it. And he has no counselors to guide him. I would liken Haman's situations to Saul, not in the sense of pacing, but it's in the sense that when God abandons somebody, when God has removed his spirit, removed his common grace, like you've done. If you remember Saul, when God removed his spirit, I mean, the guy went downhill as if like he becomes so wicked. At the end, he'd end up being in a witch house eating. You know, it's just that when God's spirit is away from which God said, okay, you're done, it's as if like you're falling down, this kind of you've been given up to Satan to just take you, do whatever Satan wants to do with you. Because whatever Haman's trying to do, he's turned back against him. He's trying to ask Esther for forgiveness, but it's that very act that condemned him. it's just that it's over for him. And I think this is what the pace of the story is telling us. God has determined the fate of Haman. So it's over for him. So God had handed him Haman over. So then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance of the king, said, "The gallows that Haman had prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, is standing at Haman's house." And the king said, "Hang him on that." So they hang Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. And I like this repetition here. I mean, we know so far in the story that Haman had prepared the gallows for Mordecai. But here the narrator is saying, the gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai. In two verses, the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Just to emphasize the fact that the very gallows that Haman was preparing for Mordecai, he's going to be hanged on that gallows. You know, he's just saying that, just show us, you know, this is the reversal of fortune here again, that he was hanged on the very, he fell into his own pit. Okay? And then the wrath of the king was abated. So, Harbona does not even wait for the king to ask. Generally, the king asks for advice. Here again, with the pace, Harbona just said, there is something here that... But when Harbona makes it clear, the words of Mordecai who saved the king, it just showed the sharp contrast, is that, okay, this guy is an enemy. Your friend here, the person who saved you, he was trying to hang him. And then it's just kind of like a combination of revelation here that just condemned him and really hard. So the day before, he went out joyfully and glad of heart. The next day, he's hanged. The day before, he was bragging about his high position of power and honor. And the next day, his head was elevated. But not the way that he expected his head to be elevated. And the day before, Haman wanted to remove Mordecai as an obstacle to complete his glory. Now he is completely removed from the picture for something else to happen, because Haman was an obstacle. And we will see in the future, in the next chapters, what will happen when Haman is out. Who will replace him? Because he was an obstacle, because God is acting. The wicked will fall and the wickedness will not prevail. And this is what we see here throughout, since creation. Satan has always tried and still trying to thwart God's plan for his children. But God defeated him and his final judgment awaits him. And we know that for us, God has delivered us from the power of sin and death. And one day, we can shout hallelujah that death, our last enemy, will be utterly destroyed. That's what we read from 1 Corinthians 15:26. The wrath of King Ahasuerus was abated when Haman was hanged. For the king and for all of us, that was justice, because the wicked Haman was punished for his wickedness. I mean, if you read the story, who would not want Haman to be killed? I mean, it's just normal. We saw that the guy is wicked. But God's wrath was satisfied with the death of Jesus, his only son. In his justice, the wicked, which is us, were not punished for our wickedness. We were pardoned, forgiven, and Jesus, the innocent one, was hanged on our behalf. Okay. That is God's economy. That was God's justice. Not like this king's justice, which is really, according to human justice, is just a good justice. But God's justice is so much higher, so different. And I remember Romans 5:10 tells us, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That is, while we were yet enemy of God, he died for us. Christ died for us. So, and we can also talk about that, you know, for nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest. You know, like things that are hidden will one day come to light when Jesus returns, because Jesus is the light. He brings really plots and everything that was not mentioned earlier. So this is why in 1 Corinthians 4:5, Paul said, therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive his commendation from God. And we know that Ecclesiastes, that we'll cover also in chapter 12, that God will bring every deed into judgment, and good and bad. So, lastly, we say that Mordecai was, and then he was in power, but he ended up being humiliated and killed. And Jesus started low, was humiliated, and then glorified. That's also the big contrast. But what I want to also close here is that the revelation of Esther as a Jew also symbolizes that Esther is of God's people, a special people, God's covenant people. So when you rise against Mordecai or against Esther, when Haman was against Esther or Mordecai, it was not just against these people that Haman was against God himself. So the story is not about Haman's falling, but it's also about God's people rising. So God is actually speaking to Esther when Esther said, my people. God is silently saying, this is my people. So when you go against God's people, you fall. Okay? Because God has a seal. God has made a promise to these people that he would protect them. So no one ever who has risen against God's plan will stand. So God is speaking to today also to us, knowing that we are his people today. So we cannot go in life fearful of our enemies who are rising against us, because we forget about God's promise that he will never leave or forsake us. That is, our life is guaranteed. Our life is protected forever. So we have no need to fear the enemy. We can really go boldly in life, knowing that God is with us. If God is with us, who can be against us? Because he had not spared his own son. You know, he has really given us everything that he had. So today we need to go to life with really great joy and peace. Facing life every day, like Mordecai didn't know what was planning for him the night before. He was going to hang, but he had no idea that there was a gallows for him. But God acted through the night. God acted through history the same way. I mean, we saw that God is acting like this all the time. So, brothers, I want to say that do not fear. Do not be anxious about anything. This is the time for us to trust, you know, God, who is so sovereign. You know, who would know that a little girl, an orphan girl, you know, coming from nowhere, parents, insignificant parent, was left behind in a country with great, 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 great people, people who should have fear. That's the very girl that God has used to save his people. And because of that salvation, we have a Jesus Christ who's coming because of that salvation. I mean, this is only God could craft a story like this. So when you don't see God's name in Esther, I want you to even feel him, to see him that he is active. He's determined to kill. He's laughing at the powers of this world. We need to really read this book laughing with him. Mm-hmm. Laughing with him, laughing with about life. You know, just be happy because there is nothing that God cannot control. Mm-hmm. You know, even the most powerful person, he will bring him low. Mm-hmm.